How's it going, guys? Welcome to episode 73 of Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons. This is Janae Libby, your podcast host with the most. Yuck, that's gross. Let me keep going. Today's show is sponsored by Teej.fm, T-E-E-J.fm, a brand new podcast collaborative network put on by WTJU. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of it. Also to my sponsors over at Patreon, patreon.com/audaciouspod. We thank you for sponsoring this podcast. And to the lovely and talented Michelle Jones and Jason Alley, who was just named Chef of the Year in Richmond for the fifth year in a row. Do you hear that, Charlottesville? Thank you to the owners of Pasture, Comfort, and Flora Restaurant in Richmond for sponsoring Audacious. We love our sponsors. Thank you so much. Let's get this show on the road, shall we? Welcome to episode 73. I'm back. Welcome to Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons, where food is just the starting point for many deeper conversations on life, love, why are we here, success, spirituality, and of course, lots and lots of food. We talk a lot about food here at Audacious. Thank you for being my guest today. As I said at the top, I am Janae Libby, a food writer and photographer, traveler, and struggling novelist and memoirist. If you're not sure what Audacious is, if this is your first visit, be sure to listen to episode 1 where I explain my concept, although it has changed in the 2 years I've been on the air. Mainly, my purpose is connection through conversation to promote community, the 3 C's. I want to talk with rather than about folks online. I want to include everyone in the conversation. All of us doing the hard work of food here in our region, I focus on the work of food, not on the pretty Instagrammed plate, the finished product that you see online every time you open your phone. I just had to pitch my business this week at CIC. I'm taking a 16-week business course. That was really nerve-wracking, speaking in front of 30 folks about what I do here at Audacious. I can sit in front of a mic and just it rolls off my tongue because I'm just staring out the window. I'm not looking into the eyes of others, which is ironic considering that we do connect face-to-face here at Audacious. So I'm going to have to work on that a little bit. You can find me at iTunes. My website is audacious.co because .com is for sale. Today's interview... oh, what a thrill. I got to talk with Bill Smith of Crook's Corner in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. If you've ever been to Chapel Hill, you know Crook's. It is a beloved national treasure. It's in the James Beard Foundation Registry of National Historic Restaurants. It has won many awards, and Bill Smith is both a gentleman and a scholar and a former punk rocker and club owner. Why do t-shirts, concert t-shirts, figure so prominently in his restaurant story? You will have to listen to today's podcast to learn more. It's a great one, and I can't wait for you to hear it. But as you know, I kind of do a brain dump prior to the interview. I've got a lot on my mind. This week, there is so much on my mind, I am threatening to go to every week. What do you think of that idea? Should I have a podcast up every week? Is that overwhelming for you? It might be overwhelming for me, but what I'm finding is a lot of people want to tell their story, and I want to tell all the stories, and I've got a lot of stuff happening, and it's all happening fast and furious, and to talk to you 20 minutes every other week might just be too much, so let me know what you think of that idea. Boy, a lot has happened since I saw you last, since I heard you last, since you listened last. I traveled to Arlington to help Scotty unpack his brand new Casper mattress that you helped me raise the money for the Big Love birthday. Thank you again to everybody who stepped forward to help with that. We cleared out so much shit. There was so much shit in that little studio apartment. We opened the windows. We let in some new energy, some new air. I might have even smudged the place with a smudge stick. What do you think of that idea? you know what, whatever works. And the new mattress is fantastic. He is sleeping comfortably. He tells me he is sleeping better than he has in years. And I'm so thrilled with that. And I have to mention, too, because I know there are some comedy nerds out there, some podcast nerds that listen. Scotty was kind enough to accompany me to the Marc Maron show. I am a nerd, and I bought front row center tickets on StubHub. Yes, I used my a little bit of my birthday money. I did, and did this because he's my podcast hero. He has helped me so much with this podcast and with my self-sabotage habits. His book, Attempting Normal, changed my life. So I had to watch him at work. I love watching comedians at work and their process. And the only reason I'm telling you this is because he acknowledged me, and I'm so excited about it. There's something in comedy called a callback. So if you tell a joke, very quick and dirty explanation. If you tell a joke and you move on to other jokes, good comedians will call back to that earlier joke in a clever way. It'll be a throwaway comment. It might be a gesture. It might be a look. But the audience gets it and laughs because they remember that earlier joke. Well, Maron did an excellent callback at one point. It was so seamless and good and right that I couldn't even help myself. Before I could stop myself, I gave him the thumbs up and went, nice, like a big dork. I couldn't help it. I just did it. I was like, nice, nice callback, dude. And I'm not kidding you. Within about 45 seconds, without losing a beat, he looked at me, winked, and gave me a thumbs up back. He did not break stride. He was mid-joke. He had moved on to another joke. But he acknowledged my acknowledgement. And yes, I walked on air for about 3 days afterwards. And Scotty missed the entire thing because his cancer drugs made him fall asleep. Front row center, and the man falls asleep. Bless, 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 bless his heart. I was like, did you see that? He's like, see what? See what? I'm tired. Can we go home now? What a good friend. He was a very good friend to accompany me to that show. And boy, it was the show of a lifetime. His last date on maybe his last tour for a while, and he acknowledged me. So yes, this comedy nerd is very, very happy about that. It was an incredible weekend. Incredible. I loved it. And the good news, the good things just continued. Last Friday, you folks who live here in Charlottesville, you know, some days you hate your town because of the pettiness, the weirdness, and sometimes you love your town. And I had a last Friday where it was like the perfect Charlottesville day. I went and talked with Tim Gearhart of Gearhart's Fine Chocolates. You will hear that episode in 2 weeks. And it was this incredible interview, this incredible conversation. I left, had some errands to run. I ran into Jason Becton of Marie Bette. I ran into Rachel Pennington of The Pie Chest. They both gave me a big hug. We had some great conversations. I just kept running into people I knew. I ran into Jerry Newman of ABC. It was like Baker's Day. I ran into him at Bodo's because I had to pick up my pastrami and Swiss. Don't you love that, Charlottesville? I love when I have days like that. It was a beautiful sunny day, not like the weather we've been having. Ugh, I got this rain. I know we need it, but Jesus Christ, can we get some sun, please? I'm starting to feel like I'm Ray Bradbury in that short story about Venus, and they're going to lock me in a closet here soon. But boy, it was an incredible day, to make a long story short. I just had one of those quintessential Charlottesville afternoons that made me feel proud and happy to live here. It was fantastic. And it continued with my conversation with Autumn Olive yesterday. I went out to Autumn Olive Farms on a gray, drizzly day, but it didn't matter. Clay took me out on the ATV. I saw some baby piggies. They were adorable, 5 days old. Check my Instagram. I put up a video. We talked pig. We talked pork. We talked sustainability. He and Linda have created something so special out there, and I cannot wait for you to hear that conversation. That's going to be up in a couple of weeks here at Audacious. Wow, I'm just on a tear. I'm on a high because I love where we live, and the stories lately have been so good. including the one that I'm about to throw in your ears right now. Bill Smith of Crook's Corner. What a guy. What does it mean to be a steward for a nationally beloved restaurant? And how is he dealing with this new world order? How is his kitchen family coping? We're going to talk about that. Quick thank you to my sponsors at Audacious, my Patreon sponsors. Check out patreon.com/audaciouspod. Thank you to Michelle Jones and Jason Alley over at Pasture, Comfort, and Flora. If you would like to sponsor, please ask me for a press kit. Your sponsorships ensure that this podcast stays solvent and continues to grow so that we can tell more stories. I have a dream of a dedicated space, a podcast truck, other folks to go out and tell the stories. It's all going to happen. I know it because of where we live. Enjoy Bill Smith. I'll see you on the flip side. Cheers. Wanted to ask the really important question first. Mm-hmm. I'm here for the weekend.
Right.
Where are the good record stores?
Oh, well, let's see. That, you know, there aren't really record stores anymore, but we have, there's one in Carver called, what does he call himself? Backstreet Records, that does vinyl and stuff.
Yeah. That's why
it's,
I asked.
Yeah, it's right. Do you know where are you staying?
The Holiday Inn Express.
Okay. So, well, Carver is right there. You know, this is the town right beside us.
Yeah.
And on Main Street in Carver, right, there's a V, and there's a thing called the Spotted Dog Cafe in the V.
Okay.
And on the, across the street on the, on the left, somewhere in that block, there's the vinyl store.
Great. Yeah. That's kind of what I do on road trips.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And you're the music guy.
Yeah.
So I wanted to be sure and ask you that right off the top.
Sure. Yeah. And then we have The Cradle. I don't know who's at The Cradle this weekend, but there's all kinds of good music in town all the time.
Oh, that'd be good for tomorrow night after dinner.
Yeah.
Drop in.
Yeah. They have front room, a big room, and a back room, and there's no telling, but there are lists in the, you can pick up an independent, and it has. There's also, sometimes at the station they have music, and then at 506 and The Cave. And so you really can find all kinds of music here. It's really remarkable sometimes.
Yeah.
It's really remarkable.
Yeah, I love Chapel Hill. It reminds me a lot of Charlottesville in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, it's still got that funky music vibe, like,
yeah,
local
we really
bands.
Have that. It's turned into, it's became sort of, it got sort of a critical mass,
mm-hmm.
Where all of a sudden people could make a living at it almost, you know, instead of having to wait tables or cook for me.
They can,
there's little studios tucked away and producers. And plus people with things like this can produce their own music now.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
You can't even keep up anymore. It used to be you knew who was what and all that kind of stuff, but now it's impossible. It's just luck. A lot of times you wander in a place, you go, oh my God, these people are great. Who are they? You
exactly. Exactly. All the equipment improvements and stuff.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And the reason why I asked that for my listeners, you've got quite the music background. I mean, you're a world-renowned Crook's Corner chef, James Beard, yada, yada,
yeah,
awards
whatever,
out the yin-yang.
Yeah.
But
a little goes a long way.
Yeah, right. But your music background is fascinating to me. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? Well, I'm not a musician, but I've always been interested in music. I was a musician once. I was a marching Tar Heel. I played trombone in the university band. But
you didn't?
Yes, I did. And in high school as well. But I wasn't very good, I don't think. But it was really fun. You got to go on trips and cut up.
I was on marching band, too.
Yeah, you know what I mean,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was a flag girl.
Okay, excellent, yeah. So anyway, that was the extent of my musicianship. But I was one of the early sort of owners of the Cat's Cradle, which is now sort of legendary. It's approaching 50 years old, I think. I can't believe that. But
God, that's crazy.
72, 73. It's hard to say. It was sort of started informally. It didn't have a premises at first. It was just an idea.
Right.
People
right.
would gather and play music together in a bar, and, mm-hmm. you know, and then it became a club, and now Frank runs it. Frank Heath runs it, does a sensational job, makes a living at it, and is mm-hmm. you know, and has all kinds of different shows in other venues sometimes, and brings big names, and it supports a music subculture here that's just fabulous.
Yeah,
just fabulous.
Well, and I learned about it listening to the Gravy episode.
Yeah,
where
you
donated your rock T-shirts.
I had a million of them. I gave them to the university because I've been squawking for years that they ought to pay attention to that side of the culture around here. And now they do. And so, and that was, it seemed appropriate place for them to end up because they were in these giant heaps all over my closet.
Right. That's so
and I've outgrown some of them, shall we say. So.
Yeah. Right. You look at it and you're like, how did I fit into that?
That can't be mine.
I love that. I've got like a historical section of my closet, yeah. like just beloved clothes you can't bear to give because there's so many memories attached to them.
Well, this was like doing it as a chunk was easier. Like you could never go through and say, okay, this one goes, this one stays. That wouldn't have worked.
Sure.
So it's just like here.
Here's three garbage bags full of
3,000 t-shirts.
T-shirts.
And of course, they're all laundered and folded and cataloged in little boxes in the stacks at UNC now.
So oh my God,
that's a scream to me.
That's kind of funny.
Yeah,
because you're
and you can go look at them. You can go over there and get a permit and go sit there and go through them if you like.
Oh my God, I might have to do that.
I don't know.
I might have to do that this weekend. I think that'd be fun. But and these are shirts that you wore in the kitchen.
Usually, yeah, they had Clorox splatters and grease stains and ripped and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, that was sort of my uniform for years.
Yeah. Precious,
I was just known for it. Yeah.
Precious Crook's Corner artifacts
on
your shirt.
They're both. Yeah.
Well, and you mentioned briefly about musicians and artists and rotating through your kitchen and working
there. Yeah, not so much now, but once upon a time that was half my staff.
Yeah.
Because you need those people need a flexible schedule.
Yeah.
And kitchens are that. You can be very flexible working in a kitchen. And they're also smart. Those people tend to be really smart, you know, and creative and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good match.
Oh, that's a good point.
No, they're always artists.
Right. So are they better able to problem solve?
Not necessarily, but they just have a sort of a loose point of view. They can take what's coming, you know, that kind of thing, you know.
Oh, and in the kitchen, that's very important to assess where you are right at this moment, where you might be in an hour.
Figure yourself out, you know,
come
up with new ideas even, you know, or, you know, just there's an enthusiasm that sort of person has that's helpful. Because that's hard work back there. I mean, you know, it's really hard work, and so you need somebody that can roll with whatever comes their way.
Right. And this isn't a great segue. I'm still working on those. Who makes up your kitchen now? Because I know that in this present political climate, you have been very vocal on Facebook and very present in your concern for your kitchen.
Yeah. I've got a lot of people, a lot of immigrant people in my kitchen. Unhappily, a lot of their families have mixed documentation, so I'm real worried about people getting separated from their loved ones.
Yeah.
So, some of these guys have been with me forever.
Yeah.
15 years, 17 years, that stuff like that.
But that's kind of unheard of in a kitchen.
It is, but I'm lucky. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when someone is in your kitchen that long, because I know in Charlottesville they rotate in and out maybe every couple of months, maybe a year, maybe 2 years. When someone's there 15 years, does it just run itself?
It can. That's the reason I'm able to travel as much as I do, although I'm trying to do less of that now because it wears me out. The last couple of years I was running around like a crazy person, just, you know, all those stupid festivals and stuff. I don't know. You know?
Sure.
So anyway, but yes, but the other side of that is that the kitchen is small. There aren't any extra people. So when someone's not there, then the other people have to do their work for them. So I took unfair advantage, I think, these last few years of that. I'm trying to do less of that now.
Ah, right. Right.
It's just, you know, but I do trust them completely. I mean, that's, I have, you know, I just show people what I want done, and that's usually I can go away if I want to. They're probably glad I'm gone. But,
yeah. Oh, good. He's got a podcast this
really.
Morning.
Yeah. He's out of here. Yeah. We can eat steak now. He's not looking.
And when they're there that long, they become family. They have to.
They are family, yeah.
You know the names of the kids, and you know when their birthdays are. And
I do. I'm the godfather and the honorary grandfather, and I've been to weddings, you know, you name it.
Oh, God, that just warms my heart. I love that. That's wonderful.
It is wonderful. I mean, and they're hilarious. You know, these guys that work for me, I love them to death. And, you know, they help. I'm almost 70 years old, you know, so it's like, it's really hard for me to keep doing this, but that helps. To have clowns in the kitchen helps a lot.
I was going to say, God, that's, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
Well, I couldn't start doing it. I've done it so long now, I can keep going. It's like that roadrunner thing where he runs off the cliff and it doesn't fall until he looks down.
His legs keep going.
Until he looks down, and then when he looks down, he falls. But that's what I am. I'm at that point now.
Well,
excuse me.
I have eaten here once, and I'm eating here again tomorrow night. You mentioned in an interview how the influence of your kitchen has changed the recipes and the cuisine a bit they've been here.
A lot of the guys are from Mexico, and that food tends to be spicy. And I say this all the time. When I first came to work here, people would complain about things being too spicy. Now that never, ever happens. Ever. So the public has come along. They've learned, I don't know if they're more adventurous or they've just been exposed to more different stuff or whatever. Yeah. But anyway, so the public has sort of moved along.
That's
wonderful. And is receptive.
That might be Southern cuisine in general.
Yeah, it is. Excuse me one second. Hey,
sure,
Edgar.
Sure.
How you doing?
This is the reality of restaurant work, folks.
Huh? Sorry to interrupt.
You got questions and deliveries, and we'll take a moment here and come back.
Sorry, I've got a couple of deliveries that will come in.
Oh, sure.
Who is? That was my agent, but she can wait. my book, my book publicist.
Oh, do you have a new book coming out?
I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I'm too distracted right now, but I've got the material ready. I just have to. It'll be the second volume of that, actually.
Fabulous.
So, I've got. It's just, you have to fit it in around an 80-hour-a-week job, so. Well, it can be done. I mean,
right.
And I'm a better writer now than I used to be. When I wrote that one, I was really, I don't know how I did it, honestly. But now I write a lot more. I've been asked to write lots of things since. I've had another book since then. So,
yeah, the Crabs and Oysters book.
Yeah.
Now, how different is it to change hats like that? Because from working in a restaurant to doing a book, and you've also been on television, too.
Yeah, I've done some TV stuff, too. Yeah. That's not hard. You just show up and do it. I mean, if I had a show, that'd be one thing, but I'm just the guest on other people's shows.
Right.
And that's not really very much. You just have to make time to do it. To write a book, my main problem was that I was like a horrible student. I mean, sit down at the desk and all that kind of stuff is not me at all. And so I had to really make myself do that one.
Yeah.
And I had to, but I learned as I went, and I figured out how to, use my time properly and all that kind of stuff. And then now it's easier, but I don't know. It's mainly time as much as anything.
Yeah, sure.
And I've learned that if you're not in the mood to write, forget it. Go do something else.
Sure.
At least for me, I have moods. Some days I wake up and think, okay, I can get a lot done today. I know it and knock it out. And then other days you just sit there and go, you're wasting your time. Go.
Yeah, exactly. Is it harder to write the intro bits to each recipe or to do all the testing for the recipes?
Well, I usually the crab book, I did have to test myself, and that was difficult because, again, finding time. I came in here on Monday nights and we were closed and did it. But with this book, Sherry Castle tests them for me, so I didn't have to do anything.
Oh, well, I'm talking to her later today.
I can't begin to praise her enough on things like that. I'm hoping that used to be you got a bunch of a big advance for stuff and you could afford to pay someone to do it for you. Things have changed. So I don't know with this next volume. I'm hoping I get enough to hire her again if she'll do it.
Oh, right. Yeah, because the advances are gone. The marketing departments that used to help market books.
Yeah, you have to do it all yourself. Well, that's fine, honestly.
Sure.
I mean, they were helpful at the beginning. They set up a few things at the beginning, but my publicist and I actually did most of the stuff and continue to do things, and it's fine. And actually, it's easier if you do it yourself and you sort of eliminate the person in the middle you don't need there anyway.
Yeah,
so we'll see. I would like to do it again. I would like her to do it again too. She did a great job. It's great because everybody comes up and says everything works, and there are no mistakes, no errors, or anything. And I don't know. You probably know. When lots of cookbooks are not correct.
Oh my God! No kidding. No kidding.
And this one, everything's right.
Yeah,
everything's right in it. And so it was worth every dime.
I can't recall. Is the recipe for that stupid pie in the seasoned in the South? Put that in quotes.
That'll be in the next one.
Oh, in the second one.
Yeah, there's a variation on it, but it's my grandmother's lemon meringue pie, but with that crust. Because I didn't think of that pie until I don't know why. I mean, I grew up with it, but Southern Foodways Alliance was having a field trip in Eastern North Carolina. And they wanted, mainly they were coming for barbecue, of course, but they wanted one night that wasn't going to be barbecue. So they asked me, I'm from New Bern down there. And they asked me to come up with a dinner for that had Eastern North Carolina food that wasn't barbecue. And so I was thinking, and I remembered that pie. So I did some nosing around and found there's a bunch of different recipes for it. And put this one together, sort of compile this one out of the stuff I scared up, and like, so the rest is history. So
yeah, it's and listeners, it's Atlantic Beach Pie, and the reason I called it That Stupid Pie is I heard that sometimes you call
That's
it that.
Oh
my God, you
that.
Want that stupid pie
that
again?
Stupid pie again, yeah. It's, at least it's easy to make. It's the easiest pie in the world. People can't get over how simple it is.
I'm ordering it tomorrow night.
All right, well, last, we always have it.
Yeah. Last time I was here, I had to get banana pudding because I hadn't had that since my grandmother passed.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay. Cool.
Because I just refused to make it because it's not going to taste like hers. Yours was really good, though.
It's made from scratch. I mean,
yeah.
That really makes all the difference in the world.
I might even venture to say it was better.
Really,
sorry, Nana.
She'll come get you.
Right? She'll haunt me tonight. What did you say? Oh, my God.
No, you're never supposed to say that.
Say it's better than your grandma's.
No, I've never said that. Well, I mean, I tell people that all the time.
Yeah. I take it back. I take it back.
She didn't mean it. Sure.
Well, and you grew up in New Bern.
Yeah.
Did you have grandmothers that cooked a lot?
I had all kinds of people that cooked a lot. My great-grandmother on my mother's side was a fantastic cook. And she lived in a big house downtown, and every day that until she was in her 90s, I think, she cooked a big lunch, and everybody in the family that worked anywhere nearby came home for lunch.
Every day?
Well, not the weekends, but weekdays, right? And I was in junior high school in that neighborhood, and I would always leave school and go over and have lunch with grandmother, and she'd have, you know, easily 6 or 7 people every single day. And it would be like you'd sit down and there was china and tablecloth and manners and everything. And everybody had an hour, so it was concise. And occasionally there'd be a guest.
Wow.
And it was, you know, many vegetables. And I mean, it was a big meal. And that's just the way I grew up. I didn't know any different. I mean, people used to eat their big meal in the middle of the day in the South.
Right, dinner and supper.
Yeah,
and then you
dinner,
have a,
right,
yeah, dinner,
night,
right.
You know, it was a sandwich or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so that's, she was the best. She was remarkable. And I said she did it on a walker. I remember being on a walker, stirring gravy at the stove, you know, so.
Is this a great gravy a term for something else or real gravy?
No, she'd be making gravy on the stove. She had a big roasting pan. I can see it. And she'd be there. And she wouldn't let you, didn't want any help and didn't want any comment or anything.
Right.
You could watch from a distance, but you weren't allowed to.
Right, right.
It wasn't like I helped her cook ever.
Right. And the reason I ask, I'm still almost 50 and I'm still learning so much about Southern cuisine. I just learned about chocolate gravy. What is that?
Yeah. We didn't have that, but I know what it is.
Yeah. Is that an Eastern North Carolina thing?
No, I never heard of it until, I think I heard it from Sherry, actually.
Okay, yeah. Okay. What are some of the dishes in Eastern North Carolina that you might not find other places?
Well, clearly is one.
That Atlantic Beach
pie. Is one. And then we do something, I did it with Vivian Howard on her show, the first time I was on her show, where we killed a pig. I don't know if you saw that one. But
I did.
And we made corned hams, which is something very specific to Eastern North Carolina, just a few counties.
Yeah, I'd like to try that.
It's easy, but it has to, you know, takes time because it has to sit.
Sure,
so
sure.
That's one, and that's one of the things that I try out a lot when I'm traveling and do guest appearances, because nobody's ever heard of it, and it's really good. It's so good nobody can believe it. So, what else? And then the usual things. I mean, we had a lot of seafood because I'm from New Bern's right on the coast, so that we had all kinds of seafood. And I had one side of the family was Catholic, so on Fridays you had seafood because you weren't supposed to eat meat in those days.
So you had your fish Fridays, even in the South. Huh.
Oh, yeah. There's a big Catholic congregation in New Bern.
Yeah.
It goes back to colonial times.
Wow, so. Nice. And Crooks is famous for inventing shrimp and grits,
well, they didn't
supposedly.
So much, but Bill Neal, who was my predecessor here, he was the founding chef here, grew up in South Carolina where it was a fisherman's breakfast, something that I think that was just routinely eaten and nobody thought much about. And he put it on the menu here and it sort of took off. And now it's everywhere. It's inescapable, I think, at this point.
Yeah, it is. Everybody's got their own version.
Well, that's fine. You know, sure.
Sure.
Why not?
Yeah. Sure, exactly. And what is this? How important is the Southern Foodways Alliance to you?
To me? Oh, it's great.
I wanted to mention that because that's how we met.
I think it is. I met you in Richmond at our field trip in Richmond.
Yeah.
Or Charlottesville or somewhere. It was all one trip. We went to
It was a meet cute because you sat next to me on the bus and just said, "Hey, how's it going?" And I was so intimidated because I hadn't really gone to a food conference. Uh-huh. I had a little bit of imposter syndrome.
You
really put me at ease.
Oh, well,
and it was only after 2 hours talking to you that I realized you were a chef. Uh-huh. You picked up your friend. I'm like, oh, he's a chef. Like, oh, let me sit up here. I'm like,
yeah, no. I love that organization. It's culturally really important. I think it's true that that culture and that your dinner table is sort of the benchmark of your culture. And
yeah.
So it approaches the South in that way. And,
yeah.
And they also see it as a place maybe of reconciliation, the dinner table, people learning to get along with one another better. And they document things that are just, you know, the bartenders in New Orleans and pit masters all over the South and tamale makers in Mississippi. And they write all that stuff down. I think it's important somebody writes it down. You know, even
too.
If nobody ever goes back and looks at it again, it's there somewhere.
Me too. Just have historical record.
Just save that because these people are interesting and worth knowing about.
Yeah.
So that was the most attractive thing to me, was the fact that it paid so much attention to that kind of stuff. But, you know, the people who belong to it, the membership is wonderful. And the events are great.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on and on. They they do all kinds of stuff now. They all kind of, like I said, the Gravy podcast and the publications.
And yeah. Tina did a great job with that.
She did do a great job.
I'm going to totally pitch them, too. I'm trying to come up with an idea because I've heard they're looking for producers.
Yeah, they are. There's been like in the newsletter, there's been like, anybody know anybody? So,
yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah, so I like I said, the membership and the people who run it and the whole thing. And it's meant a lot to me because I've made so many wonderful connections and so many good friends, my goodness.
No kidding. No kidding.
Because when you go to these things, there are people from all over and they're your colleagues. And you might have heard of them, but your chances of running into them are slim because you're always at work, except occasionally you get away for these things. And so everybody's in one spot. It's really fun.
Oh, I noticed that because I've done oh, sure.
Can they see this? Oh, okay. Excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
Sorry.
No, not a problem. Not a problem.
Oh, hey there. Hey,
how's
it going?
I'm
okay.
No, not at all.
That was actually two. I got two out of the way because they showed up at the same time. So
I'm trying to figure out where my camera is.
Oh.
Dark. And it's not working. That's bad because I need a selfie.
I'm constantly bedeviled by technology. All right, now. Oh, here it is.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Sorry.
Not at all. And I've just got a few more questions, too.
Chris Corner. Hello, Chris Corner. Are you talking about brunch or supper? Okay. All right. Let me find the page. So we open at 5:30, and we seat on the half an hour after that. So what did you have in mind time? How many people are you, first of all, I guess? Okay. Let's look. With the pages here, wait a second. Okay, I can do that. What name, please? Okay, and is there a phone number, please? Okie doke. All right, five of you at, excuse me, 6:00 on Sunday. Cool, thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
This is a full-service restaurant, folks. The owner is taking the reservations.
I'm not the owner. I'm just the chef.
Just the chef.
Praise the Lord. I don't own the joint. So.
Always here.
Yeah.
Always. You need me to do something, Brian? Are you okay?
No, I'm waiting on the painter here.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And I literally just have a few more
questions. No, it's fine. If you don't mind the interruptions, I can.
No, yeah, not at all. Not at all. First question, I want to talk about your kitchen again because I noticed I'm out of town, so I'm not really up on the news, but I was looking at it last night, and D.C. had a day without immigrants in their restaurants. Like they did,
we're going to
have a day
too.
Without immigrants. Did you guys do that yesterday?
Well, I gave them the choice. The people who wanted to take off could. We had had a long Christmas break, snow break, and we had a water thing here where the water went down over the week weekend, so nobody wanted to miss work.
Okay.
And I gave them the option.
Okay.
And, some people around town did, some people didn't.
You know?
But this whole town is sympathetic, I must say.
No
Even
kidding.
Even one of the delivery guys that just came in was having a fit over that news conference yesterday.
Oh, God.
Which is like an assault.
Yeah. I haven't watched
Well, you'll have an aneurysm.
But I saw the reactions.
It was like watching a lunatic. It was like, And I don't care if you have this on your podcast.
Oh, I know. Well, I've already gone off on them.
You have?
Before. Yeah. I wonder what it's going to take before he just has a breakdown. I mean, honestly.
I mean, he's like...
Honestly.
Even the Russians made fun of him this morning. Did you hear that?
Oh, Lord.
No, the Pravda said that you had to have been drunk to make any sense of what he said yesterday.
Oh, my God.
Pravda said that.
And do you know, I listened to a podcast, and it was on Sunday when the missile went off.
Yeah.
And the interviewer, they kept the tape running.
Uh-huh.
The interviewer was like, do you mind if I check my phone? Because I want to check this missile thing. Uh-huh. And the guy was like, yeah. So it's like invading regular conversation even. Yeah. Like, I need to check my phone to see if we're at war yet. Hold on.
Right, yeah.
God.
No, I don't know. I mean, I just...
Yeah. I want to talk about it, but it's like, how do you even like approach this monster of a situation?
I don't know. I mean, it's really astonishing. I don't know. I don't know. I'm baffled every morning. I wake up and I listen to the news. I go, what?
Yeah.
What?
I've taken the approach. I think you have to just take care of yourself as much as you can so that you can be strong enough to handle it.
Right.
Music, marching band. I read an analogy. Michael Moore said in chorus, when you hold a long note, people sing and then other people will stop to take a breath, but they'll kind of keep their mouth open. So you think they're still singing. Uh-huh. So in that way, the note is sustained over a long period of time.
Still pass it around. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's our duty just to keep raising hell.
Yeah.
You know, I used to be a polite Southern boy, but not anymore.
Right?
I'm in somebody's face. Lord help some evangelical gets all over me. And they're easy to make them cry, too, I tell you.
How do you make an evangelical cry?
Just challenging what they just told you.
Exactly.
They assume that they assume everybody really agrees with them, or knows that they ought to agree with them. And if you calm them down.
Mm-hmm. God, isn't that funny?
It's sort of funny, but it's sort of sad, you know?
Yeah.
I don't listen to crap anymore. You know, I just.
I've had a few interactions with my family and with people I know, and I think they're used to me being quiet about stuff. Yeah.
Well,
so it's kind
of. I'm one of the troublemakers, but I have come from a family of them, so it's like
you have to
elbow your way in to cause trouble there. But
you're taught well.
But my family's all over the place. I mean, they go from Nazis to Marxists. You know, so
yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's sort of it's not so shocking that there's disagreements among us. Although most people are fairly civil in my family, but no, I don't. Lord help me. You know, I'm spoiling for a fight.
Well, and I read somewhere in your family, like people of different sexual orientations would come to dinner. I mean, you brought a boyfriend to dinner.
I did do that.
but it was fine.
It was it was really funny. I hope this isn't too indiscreet, but I won't tell you anyway. I don't know. I didn't really say anything. They say your mother always knows. So I never really talked about it. But and in my family, we don't talk about people's private lives really.
Right.
It's just sort of
a
line we don't cross. But
you just show up for dinner and eat.
Well,
it's like okay.
But anyway, like my sisters would bring boyfriends home, and they'd have to sleep on the couch downstairs. But okay, so you're right. But when I'd come home with mine, we got to be in the same. Because it was two guys, and mother thought that was fine.
Oh my God! Did your sister get upset?
Well, no, nobody ever said anything. But it was just sort of an amusing irony.
If you'd have been my brother, I would have been like, "Wait a minute, Mom! Come on now!"
It was an amusing irony. It occurred to me after the fact. It didn't strike me at the time, but just later looking back, I was like, "Hmm," because it didn't look right to have two guys in the same room. But I just showed up with a boyfriend and said, okay, let's see what happens. And nobody said a word. And I don't know. I've discovered with gay things, and I go to Mexico a lot too, and I've seen the same thing down there. It's interesting that people might have a sort of a general reaction, but as soon as they know somebody, not always, but like as not, they go, well, whatever, you know. I mean, there's more of that than you would think.
Sure.
There's a lot of people that are mean and that attack gay people and all that stuff, but generally, I think most people, when they go, oh, he's a friend of mine, and he was fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I liked him, or whatever. And a lot of times, it just eases over.
Yeah.
More often than you would think.
Yeah.
Usually, when those nasty religions get in, it messes it up. But
oh, God,
but just
no
regular
kidding.
People with common sense, you know.
Sure.
And some people, you know, some people it does make them feel uneasy, and I can go with that. That isn't, you know, I just That's some people are. You know.
I hope this freaking New World Order doesn't take us back in time to the 70s and 80s.
I don't know.
Because I really hope not. Well, and again, it's too big a topic to tackle here. You've been in business so long. You've been in the kitchen so long. Yeah. And this came up in a conversation I just had a few weeks ago, and I wanted to make it a part of the podcast on a regular basis.
Uh-huh.
What is your definition of success? How do you define? Yourself.
When
did you have a moment where you went, yeah, okay, I'm doing all right?
Yeah, when you could always have, you always got rent and beer money. I guess it's like, you know,
when that's covered.
Yeah.
Is that still
still a bit?
Well, beer money's covered.
Rent and beer money.
I got my PBR. I'm good.
Yeah. I mean, really, that's all I care about. I'm not. It's fun to have some celebrity, I guess, but I don't really care about that.
Yeah, because the wall's covered with awards back there.
So, but you know, whatever.
They're just pieces of paper.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. That's nice. Oh, and we got somebody taking a photo. Hey. Well, and this has been a fantastic, wonderful real life conversation.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep talking, but I know you're a busy man.
Yeah, well, I guess probably.
Do you have anything else you wanted to
cover? No, I mean, I think we sort of went all over the place. See you on the barricades. I don't know.
The barricades.
That's what, you know, that's from the French Revolution.
Oh, yeah. I will see you on the barricades. I will. I have my Nasty Woman t-shirt.
Right, yeah. There's this old print that showed up. It's been making a circulation of, like, the fishwives pulling cannons to the Bastille. That's what I feel like.
Oh, gosh. Oh, Lord. I might have to get a young person to help me push a cannon.
Yeah.
But I'll wear a pussy hat. I don't have one, but I'll get one.
Yeah. I'll probably get them at Walmart soon.
Oh, I bet. Made in China.
Yeah.
But made in China pussy hats, like with fake yarn or fake wool.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God. All right. Let's end up with just a couple fun speed round questions.
All right.
We'll wrap it up with something fun. What's your favorite kitchen utensil? Like, what's the...
Swivel peeler. One of those old $2 ones from the dime store.
Oh. Like for apples and things?
Yeah, that thing with a swivel.
You know,
they cost like $2 or $3, and they're efficient, and they're
take your skin off
if you're not careful.
Those are good. If you have $5 and you're on a road trip and you stop at a gas station, what are you getting? What are you going to buy?
So you mean we don't have to buy gas? You mean
no gas?
Well, then beer, I guess.
Beer.
You can get, you know. Some beer, you can get six packs some places for $5.
What, Mickey's Big Mouth?
Yeah, maybe, or whatever. Yeah, you know, if you only got $5, you can't be choosy.
There you go. If you could fly to any city in the world just to eat, where would you go?
Ooh, that's a hard one because I like so many. I'd probably go back to Kyoto, I think.
Oh, nice. Oh, I'll have to pick your brain when I go there.
Are you going?
I would love to go. Okay. It's on my bucket list.
No, it's really... Japan was amazing in many ways, but the food was something else.
Yeah. I love to travel, but there's new places to go, but then there's places you've been.
But you
been.
Like, you want to go back to. I'm the same way. I go to Mexico City all the time. And
really? Yeah. Oh, I need got to pick your brain about that,
I
too.
Love Mexico City, but I also love Montreal. And,
nice.
I don't know. Yeah.
There's Colin Perry has a fantastic restaurant in Montreal.
I don't know Colin, except we're friends
on Facebook.
Media, yeah.
Oh, but what's it called? Dinette?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Triple Crown
Dinette. Triple Crown. Yes.
Yeah. Now, I need to go. You know, I haven't been to Montreal. I used to go to Montreal every single year. For years I went because it's in this time zone. But it's a good, if you never have anything but a long weekend, it's not very much more trouble than going to New York. I used to go there all the time, take the train to Quebec City, for a day or two.
Oh, nice.
And, but since we've been acquainted, I haven't gotten back there because I've been too busy this last couple of years. So Montreal hasn't been on my.
I need to go, but not in the winter, I've heard. Too cold.
Well, I actually always went in the winter because I went in January because it's a good time to get away from here.
Oh,
my birthday's in January. And, it was a good excuse, you know. And I love cold weather. I've been in a hot kitchen for 40 years. It's August. I can't stand.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, down
Montreal's
here.
Montreal's a wonderful city, as is Quebec.
So, yeah, very nice.
Yeah.
All right, and the last question I asked, and I kind of do this to pay it forward, in the world of food in this region, who should I talk to next?
Who should you talk to next? Are you going to be in this town or?
It could be here. It could be anywhere.
God, I have so many friends. I don't. It's hard to single one. I think you should go to somebody that nobody's heard of. Some of these ethnic people. There's a cool guy down the street. His name is Tuan Le. He owns a Vietnamese place called Lime and Basil. I go there for lunch all the time. It's delicious food. It's very simple, good Vietnamese food.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy. He's in his late 20s, I'm guessing. Bought the place from his uncle. And works hard all the time. You know, like
yeah.
that. You know, and I think people like that are really interesting. I think that's where you should look. There's a bunch of taco trucks around town. Talk to one of them.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. Like,
and there's great. And you know who else is? I don't know. Right across the street here is Vemala.
Yeah.
Jahendran. She's from Kerala in southern India.
It's cool.
It's a wonderful restaurant.
Cool.
And she's smart and interesting person. So check out something like that.
I totally will. I haven't done that yet. And God,
if Emma's over for lunch while you're here, you ought to go over there and just introduce yourself.
I will.
She's very cool.
I will.
She's a very cool person.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you.
Oh, no, I love seeing you. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, and I can't wait to eat.
Yeah, we'll see what tomorrow night y'all come.
Tomorrow night, I'm going to get some of that stupid pie.
All right.
It's all my husband talks about.
I'll make sure we have. I can't imagine we'd run out because we make bazillions of them. But
right.
Knock on whatever that is, Formica. Yeah.
Knock on Formica.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Thanks so much.
Oh, not at all. Thank you.
Great. I've only got one word. Tremendous. Tremendous. I was so honored and grateful that Chef Smith took the time out of his incredibly busy day to talk with me. And when I mean busy, I'm not mincing words. I'm not kidding around. He gave me as much time as he could. There were literally like four or five people waiting to talk with him, share news, share messages. He had his phone. It kept dinging the entire time we were talking. And the minute we stopped, he was on the phone taking reservations. This is an all-purpose, all-services rendered chef. He is not above playing hostess and taking reservations for the restaurant if need be, getting back there and washing dishes. And it was fascinating to me to see him at work. And yes, the hubby and I dined there that evening. The food was tremendous. The service was tremendous. I love eating there. It's good fine dining, but you can wear shorts and flip-flops if you want. You can roll up your sleeves and really dig in, and nobody gives a shit. And the Atlantic Beach pie, that stupid pie, damn, it's good. And the best banana pudding I have ever eaten. And I'm sorry, Grandma. I'm sorry, Nana. But Bill's banana pudding is better than yours. It just is. I'll have pictures up on the website of all of it. Check it out. I hope you enjoyed the episode. In 2 weeks, we've got Tim Gearhart of Gearhart's Fine Chocolates. And 2 weeks after that, Linda and Clay Trainum of Autumn Olive Farms. I've got some other ones in the works. I'm talking with Sarah Gorman over at Cardinal Point. Hope to get her on the podcast. Got some round tables I'm trying to get the Lampo boys on. Who do you want to hear? Send me a comment at audacious.co. Tweet me at audaciouspod or Instagram at audaciouspod. I'm trying to use the same handle for all the social media because it's good branding. They're teaching me nice things over at CIC in my little business course. I've only got 4 weeks left. Maybe I need to work on that pitch a little better because my knees were knocking and my hands were trembling the other night. Oh my God, it was so nerve-wracking. Ugh. I'm shot out of a cannon today. Let me get off here and enjoy the little bit of sun that just came out. I hope you have a tremendous Thursday, a good weekend, a good Memorial Day weekend. Thank you for being my guest here today. Thank you to my sponsors, Teej.fm, Patreon.com/AudaciousPod, and to Michelle Jones and Jason Alley of Flora, Pasture, and Comfort. Ask me for a press kit if you are interested in sponsoring. I just reached 30,000 downloads, and I have listeners as far away as New York and California, Florida, Kentucky, West Virginia, Texas. They're everywhere. Everybody everywhere is getting audacious, guys. You can find me at iTunes. The website's audacious.co because .com is still for sale. And episodes on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel, so check it out. Send me your comments. Where should I go? Where should I visit? And until next time, I am Janae Libby of Audacious Food Talk for Gluttons. I'm very ferocious, incredibly loquacious, gracious, a bit bodacious. And when it comes to learning about food and keeping those connections going, I'm audacious. Let me try that again. I'm audacious. And I hope as my guest here today, you have become a little audacious as well. I'll see you next time, guys. Cheers. Happy Memorial Day. Get out there and do some grilling. And big love, big love, big love.